You're listening to a Hindustan Times podcast brought to you by HT Smartcast.
Welcome to season 2 of our podcast Kicks for Free, in which we discuss all things football. I am Dhiman, and with me is my co-host Vivek.
Messi!
And so, this is it. After 62 of the 64 games, England and Spain have earned the right to play in the final of the 9th Women's World Cup at Sydney's Stadium, Australia on Sunday. While Spain defeated Sweden 2-1 in a game that sprang to life in the final 10 minutes, England's superiority was on view all the way through in their game against Australia, and the 3-1 result was a fair reflection of how the game panned out. In tournament football, the last two teams remaining are not always the best two teams. You know, not everyone plays everyone else. A team could have a bad game and exit, and the element of chance becomes stronger. But, Dhiman, do you think these are the best two teams?
It didn't look that way initially, Vivek. Actually, far from it. Especially when Japan were dazzling through the group stage, when England had been stretched by Haiti, and there were so many upset results. But yes, I think the final will be between the two best teams. And I say this because look at how Spain recovered from the mauling against Japan, and how England have grown in the tournament, and how they dealt with Lauren James' absence. Even Australia coach Tony Gustafsson, who has been part of two World Cup winning campaigns as Jill Ellis' understudy in the USA team in 2015 and 19, accepted that England were more clinical in the front third. Spain, too, have shown a lot of mental fortitude, taking in their stride the late equalizer against Netherlands and again against Sweden. I think this is all said and done. This is a clash between the two best teams.
Right. Spain have Aitana Bonmati, of course, who had two goals and two assists in the round of 16 against Switzerland. A player who at 25 has emerged as one of the stars in the team as well as the tournament. We had thought that Alexia Putellas would be shining in Australia and New Zealand, but as she continues her recovery from an ACL injury, Bonmati has admirably made the World Cup her own. Iniesta and Xavi are her idols, and her performance would do both of them proud. The young Salma Paraluelo, who scored two late goals in the last two rounds, Alba Redondo and Jennifer Hermoso, make Spain a potent threat. And you can dismiss Putellas at your own peril. The mutiny of last year seems history, and coach Jorge Wilder has said he would now like to celebrate on the streets in Spain with the players and the country. England come with the experience of being European champions, of course, having won the Finalisma and having match winners in perhaps all areas of the pitch. It makes for a humdinger, doesn't it?
Wouldn't we love one, Vivek? Wouldn't we love one? One that would be a fitting end to a competition that broke attendance records, sent USA home early, and showed how far, really, the women's game has come. But one of football's, maybe sports, oldest sayings is that finals are meant to be won and not played. So an edgy, nervy, tactical 1-0 win really cannot be ruled out.
Yeah, nerves will play a part, of course, especially since Spain have never come this far. They appeared in their first World Cup only in 2015, then advanced out of their group in 2019, but fell to the United States in the round of 16. The royal family has taken to social media to praise the team, and their run seems to have united the country in celebration. Do you think it could get all too much for them?
It could for sure, because playing the World Cup final is not something you can really prepare for. But having said that, I would be surprised if it really did, because Spain have players from Barcelona. Bonmati is one. They have won Champions Leagues, and these players are used to playing in front of historic attendance figures. And the team's run is proof, you know, that the league is strong and the players are used to stiff competition. So just like the IPL, I think, which has made most Indian players stronger in the mind, I think Spain will not be overawed by the occasion. There is a reason, you know, why players and coaches say that, you know, it is It is not about pressure. I mean, pressure is a pleasure. You hear it all the time, especially ahead of big games and stuff. And I think there is an element of truth in it. There are people who look forward to such occasions to bring out their best across sport. So I don't think, even though this is the first time they've come this far, that holds true for England as well. I don't think Spain would be overawed.
Yeah, as you mentioned, England too are playing their first final, but I think they're more used to the big stage. Obviously, they're European champions and their league, the WSL, is a strong competition, probably stronger than La Liga in terms of the resources of their clubs. And beating co-host Australia in the semi-final in front of over 75,000 people isn't going to harm their confidence at all. After Sam Kerr's stupendous goal in the 63rd minute, Australia, who were buoyed by the crowd, were really pushing England, but England seemed to keep their focus. Lauren Hemp, possibly their best player in the semi-final, used the opportunity when one arose, as did Alessia Russo.
Yeah, I mean, the way England found pockets of space in Australia's middle and back thirds, the way they marked Kerr, even if it meant a booking or two, I think there was a booking in the 10th minute for Greenwood for one heavy challenge on Kerr. I mean, it was very clear that they were setting the marker down. And Millie Bright and Kerr play for the same team, Chelsea, so they would be knowing each other's game as well. Everything England put out in the semi-final was the kind of display you expect from a very mature team. It kind of reminded me of how Italy played Germany in the 2006 Men's World Cup final. I mean, prior to the game, in the quarterfinals after Italy had beaten Ukraine, this was in Hamburg, Gennaro Gattuso had been asked whether, you know, they would be intimidated by taking on the home team, one which at that point in time had not lost in Dortmund, the city that was hosting the game. And Gattuso, very calmly, you know, he said, all such talk is for people who are around the game and, you know, the fans and the pundits. He said, for Italy, it wouldn't matter who they were playing, where they were playing, the moment the referee blew the whistle. And to some of us, it did sound a bit like bravado. But, and I remember that game as clearly as almost it happened yesterday, that from the off, Italy did walk the talk. The occasion was something that they did not let the occasion get to them on the pitch. And we all know how the 2006 World Cup ended and who became the world champions.
To make their first final after the heartbreak of two World Cup semi-final defeats also means that England will be brimming with confidence. Russo made that abundantly clear after Wednesday's semi-final.
Yeah, I think that smile probably says it all, but just try and sum up your emotions for me right now.
Over the moon. I'm actually laughing at all our friends and family dancing in the crowd. But no, incredible. I think World Cup final, we've been saying we're dreaming of the semis and things like that, but now this is what it's all about, a World Cup final with this group. Yeah, buzzing.
What's it like to score the goal that absolutely cements your place in a World Cup final? Just talk me through that goal.
Yeah, well, when they scored, obviously, they got momentum, the place erupted, and then Hempo's goal completely flipped the momentum, which was really crucial, and then, yeah, to get 3-1. You can kind of settle a bit and see the game out.
I can see you smiling up at the friends and family now. It was so loud in here this evening. The Australia fans were so loud, but at times the England fans made the difference, didn't they?
Yeah, we back them every single time. That's why we do what we do on the pitch, is all our friends and family in that section there. So to be able to celebrate with them now is just really special.
Can you go all the way?
Yeah, why not? I mean, obviously Spain's going to be even tougher. I think obviously every single game that we've come into this tournament has been of the highest level, so we have to be ready. But we've been dreaming since we were little girls, so we're excited. We'll get recovered and be ready.
To me, Biman, the All-European final, three of the four semi-finalists from that continent, as well as the fact that five of the eight quarter-finalists were from Europe, is proof of the shift in power from North America. Vitaly Andonovsky, who has resigned as the USA women's national team coach, didn't get too many things right with the four-time world champions in this campaign. But he did say that England were a team to watch out for after losing a friendly last October.
I absolutely believe that. I mean, they're incredible squad. They showed once again that they're very good, that if you give them a little space, they have players that can make a difference. And they have incredible coach who I think has done a very good job ever since she came here. And I wouldn't mind facing them in the final again.
In that clip, he also makes the point about Sarina Wiegmann And that is another of the things Andonovsky's got right. This is her fourth major final. And Wiegmann has made an European and a World Cup final with the Netherlands. And she's repeated that with England. She's got the team to play in different ways. England switched to a back three and steamrolled China. And they were immediately back to a back four in the next round, the moment Lauren James was shown the red card. And even that change looked kind of seamless. For a team to be able to make such changes at a stage as big as a World Cup tells you two obvious things. One, the team has players who are mature enough to be able to adapt to different situations. And two, they are being coached really, really well. So it is difficult to sort of, you know, bring it down to one thing that has sort of made England come this far. But I think a lot of the credit goes to Wiegmann, who obviously, well, she's known to shun the limelight and stuff. And when she was asked about this, she was extremely modest about it.
You're the first coach to take two different nations to a World Cup final. How? How do you keep doing this?
I don't know. I just said to Arjan, you know, the chance that as a coach or as a player, you make it to finals is really, really special. And we made it too far already. It's just, I'd never take anything for granted, but I'm like, am I here in a little fairy tale or something?
I think it's a fairy tale for every England fan right now. You're off to the World Cup final. Congratulations, Serena.
Thank you.
Spain, of course, do dominate position. It was no surprise that they had 63% of the ball in their semi-final against Sweden. That style of play seems to be ingrained in their footballing DNA, whether it's the men or the women. Do you expect Spain to continue having more of the ball in the final? Or will England be happy to soak in the pressure and hit on the counter?
At the risk of sounding very stupid after Sunday, let me say this. I mean, England will be trying to hurry Spain to play their passes. Their front press will be very strong and they will try and take the game to Spain. They will not, possibly because they cannot, play like Japan, who rattled Spain with only 22% possession. So I think England will attack Spain from the off. For reasons we've just discussed, England have beaten one of the co-hosts. They have grown in the tournament. They've shown they can play different ways. They've shown that they can adapt to the absence of a star player who scored two stunning goals against Denmark and sort of set them on their way after that labored win against Haiti. So this is a team that's brimming with confidence. And a team that's brimming with confidence, also of the confidence of being European champions, will not want to remember Spain possibly taking them close in the European Championship, but will be approaching the game thinking that they can and they will win it.
Talking about Australia, it was heartbreak for them on Wednesday, but it does seem that the Australian public has really rallied around the women's football team. And there's also been an unprecedented amount of interest on the World Cup itself around in the whole country. That seems to be a big positive for the game in Australia, where football is not the number one sport. But going ahead, it may also benefit a men's team, won't it?
Well, it could. In Doha, when Australia qualified from the group stage, the country rallied around the men's team too. And I remember Australia men's team coach Graham Arnold telling us about how football in Asia was growing. And this was, mind you, before the entire Saudi Arabia thing happened. So Australians play a lot of sport. It's an outdoorsy country and they are good at many of them. But football really wasn't one of them. You had a Tim Cahill, you had a Harry Kewell. But, you know, you didn't have the kind of superstars that they have in swimming, in tennis. And I'm not even talking of cricket here. So, it's something that did not happen. And I think if there's one person who has changed that is Sam Kerr. I mean, Sam Kerr is a global superstar. And that sure is one way of making the sport popular. So, while I think it could benefit the men's team too, I think this will go a long, long way in making football very popular in the country of, you know, Ash Barty and Alicia Healy. I remember reading somewhere that, you know, every Australian player pretty much was saying that we want to leave a legacy. It almost sounded like how Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum talk about their idea of baseball and how it would possibly get more young English players to play cricket. So, if this is something that happens, and it should happen, because a team that goes to the semi-finals of the World Cup that it's hosting has superstars, has teams, has players playing in the Women's Super League in England. I think the future for Australian women's football is really great. And for sure,
it could have some rub-off effect on the men's game, like we have seen in the USA, where the women's team was obviously significantly better and still is significantly better than the men's team. But it has had a rub-off on the men's game as well. You have an increasing number of players from the USA who are now coming and playing in Europe, pretty much holding their own. So the game has grown in USA and you know, interest has grown in USA. And I see the same thing possibly happening in Australia as well.
Reflecting on the tournament as a whole, the United States' exit at the round of 16 against Sweden was perhaps the biggest upset of the tournament. They had won the last two editions and were gunning for a third straight title. But their exit seemed to invoke delight among a lot of people. Netherlands striker Lynette Bierenstein, for one, said that she is glad that Big Mouth US are out of the World Cup. Megan Rapinoe, their star forward in particular, seems to have faced a lot of backlash even in her own country after their exit. She missed a penalty against Sweden, of course, but the entire blame has seemed to have fallen on her. What do you make of it all?
Well, first, I mean, you know, any team that has won four of the nine editions of a competition is bound to have its share of enemies, for want of a better word. And of course, they came to the World Cup with a certain amount of confidence, and who can blame them for that? I remember in 2007 when India lost to Bangladesh in the Cricket World Cup, the Bangladeshi players were talking about the kind of confidence with which India approached that game and, you know, possibly thinking that we are going to go deep in the competition, you are going home. So these things happen. And if the USA came to the World Cup with a lot of confidence, it was because they were two-time winners. It's because of the strength of the game at home. And talking about Rapinoe, I think she, like all greats across sport, had earned the right to decide when she would call it quits. And she did. Okay, it did not end very well. Her penalty miss was particularly ironic because she's been so good at it. Yeah, she did not have a good tournament. And you know, but to blame it all on her would be unfair. And that is understating the obvious. Like we've discussed, the rest of the world is catching up. But it's equally true that the USA have a head start with their college program and with their league. Natalie Portman backs one of the teams in that country. So football in that country, the women's game in that country is really, really strong. In this World Cup, they missed a number of players due to injury, which, okay, pretty much all other teams did as well. But they also brought a number of young players. I mean, somebody like Alicia Thompson, who's 18 years old, Trinity Rodman, who's 21. Even Sophia Smith is just 23. So, yes, granted, USA have been given a blow. Granted, Europe are catching up. Granted, Europe have a much stronger culture of football. And the blow for the USA could not have come at a worse time because it's come very soon after the sexual harassment scandal in their league. But it is equally true that they also have the resources and the infrastructure to react to this and come back stronger in the Olympics next year and possibly then the World Cup.
That was it for this episode. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us on our Twitter handles at Vivek9301 and at DemanHD. If you're a true football fan, you cannot not subscribe to Kickoff, our weekly newsletter on the World Game, which hits inboxes every Friday. For more updates on this podcast, follow HT Smartcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And to listen to more such podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.